Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Six New England governors were at Harvard Medical School today speaking at a roundtable at the International Conference on Opioids. They talked about the opioid abuse epidemic in their respective states and how they're fighting it. Now, one of the most outspoken governors there, Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin. He's been a passionate and proactive governor about the opioid epidemic in Vermont. In 2014, he dedicated his entire State of the State address to the crisis. Vermont passed several innovative laws to change the way abuse is dealt with in the state. And yet, earlier this year, he told the Pew Charitable Trusts in Washington that he believes the opioid addiction crisis is not receiving the same level of commitment from the federal government. He said, quote, "I'm unconvinced that the FDA is partnering with us to try and solve this epidemic." Well, that's where we started our conversation when Governor Shumlin came to our studios earlier today. I asked him, how much responsibility does the FDA and the pharmaceutical industry hold for the opioid epidemic?
A lot. Listen, we're looking at a situation where, just think about this, every 20 minutes, an American dies of opiate addiction. Every 20 minutes. Those that don't die have their lives destroyed. When Purdue Pharma got FDA to approve OxyContin, they lied to physicians and healthcare providers across America and said it's non-addictive. It's the first non-addictive painkiller. Everybody was thrilled, and we started prescribing it like mad. People sometimes forget that if you really look at the record, doctors started finding people were getting addicted to it. So the U.S. government went looking and found that Purdue executives had lied about the addictive nature of their own substance, had not told the FDA or physicians about, had not been truthful about the addictive content of what they'd made. And they eventually pleaded guilty. Three execs at Purdue pleaded guilty. They paid a $70 million fine and went their way. Of course, these are white-collar criminals, so in America, they don't go to jail. But, you know, $70 million, you think, wow, that's a lot of money. Well, America bought that year $11 billion worth of painkillers. So what we all agree on is this is a solvable problem. Mm-hmm. And I've just signed a bill that's going to give me the ability to limit the number of OxyContin pills that physicians pass out for minor procedures. The other governors are trying to do similar things. But the frustrating part is our biggest enemy in solving this problem so that people stop dying is Big Pharma, who's making billions and billions of dollars off these painkillers, and the FDA, who continues to approve. This year, they just approved OxyContin for kids. You can't make this stuff up. 2 years ago, they approved a new painkiller called Zohydro, which I call OxyContin on steroids. Literally, after their own advisory board, made up of 13 docs, voted 11-2, FDA, do not approve this. It will make our addiction problems even worse in America. They approve it anyway.
Well, I wonder, I mean, what can a governor or even a group of governors do then to, I mean, you can advocate, but, you know, how can you change what the process is at the FDA? You can't really.
We can't change the FDA, but we can make enough noise to do the following. This is what we're doing. Let me tell you what I'm doing in Vermont. I dedicated my entire state of the state to this crisis 2.5 years ago, back when that was a pretty lonely place to be in America.
You got a lot of people's attention.
I got a lot of people's attention, and we took a fair amount of heat. But this is what we've done since. We've reformed our criminal justice system, so that we stopped locking up addicts in jail at $60,000 a year. Instead, when you get busted now for opiates in Vermont, heroin addiction, we have a third-party assessor there to figure out whether you're dangerous or whether you're just dangerous to others or whether you're just dangerous to yourself. And the vast majority of folks, 90, 80% accused, they're only a danger to themselves. Second, we've built out treatment centers like mad because we've got so many folks who need treatment and we had waiting lines for treatment. We still do, but reducing them drastically. Third, we pass out rescue kits, naloxone and others, like crazy, so that we have stopped, we're trying to stop the death that's happening before our own eyes. We've changed stigma about the disease. Mm-hmm. We declared this is a disease, not a crime, and Vermonters are embracing that.
Yeah. Well, today at the conference, you spoke about the FDA quite passionately, and you said that whoever's the next president ought to fire everyone at the FDA who dealt with opioid approval. Is that right?
I believe that the FDA is in bed with Big Pharma and is not aggressively joining governors, congressional folks, the president of the United States, anyone in really taking this disease seriously. What I find so frustrating as a governor is when you look a mom in the eye, or you look a dad in the eye, or a kid who lost their parent and now living with a grandparent. So you look at the number of kids we're putting in foster care and under state custody in all of our states in the Northeast, including Vermont. You go, this has got to be the most tragic, controllable disease that's hit us yet.
Have you asked congressional representatives in Vermont or maybe even the other New England states to put pressure?
Well, they
FDA?
Have. I mean, I just want to point out one of my U.S. senators, Bernie Sanders, objected to the appointment of the new head of the FDA, who's closer to pharma than any FDA member in recent memory, leader. But, you know, it's frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, also, we've had a lot of sort of palliative care experts on this show over the past many years who, of course, are very open-eyed and cognizant about the opioid crisis. But they also say that, and doctors have told us the same thing, that severely curtailing people's access to painkillers may be a disservice to those who genuinely need it. I mean, is that a concern?
Well, of course it is. And there's no governor in America who's trying to reduce painkillers for people who are really suffering from chronic pain. But that's the vast minority of Americans. Listen, let me ask the question differently. In 2010, we prescribed enough OxyContin in America to keep every adult high for a month. In 2012, we prescribed 250 million prescriptions. We only have roughly 250 million adults in America, so that's a bottle for every living adult American. You can't convince me that everyone in America is suffering from chronic pain. So literally, we're now in a country where we have so many people addicted that you can afford to buy an ad on the most expensive TV show in America, which is the Super Bowl broadcast, and advertise FDA-approved drugs to take care of the side effects of FDA-approved heroin. That's where we are. Hmm. This makes no sense.
Yeah. A part of me can't help but to wonder. I mean, as you mentioned, Purdue Pharma went through a legal process with the federal government. So that's done. But the way you're describing the scale and scope of the problem and the role that you believe pharma companies and the FDA play, I just have to wonder, you know, I mean, there was the whole legal pushback against Big Tobacco. Do you think something similar has to happen with Big Pharma about opioids?
I do. I don't believe there's an industry in America that gives more money to congressional campaigns, to politicians in our federal government than pharma. And therefore, I don't think that we can expect Congress to solve this problem for us, although they are waking up. This really is a battle that governors, legislators, and citizens have to lead. You know, I mean, and it affects all of our lives. I had a staff person this week who was out of the office for good reason. She just lost her roommate to, you know, opiate addiction. You know, it touches every single one of us. It doesn't matter how rich you are, how poor you are. It doesn't discriminate against political party or race. You know, everybody's in. And so many folks don't realize when they walk out of that doctor's office with the 60 pills for their minor surgery, their molars, whatever it was that was taken out, and a certain percentage of folks just get addicted.
You know, when Governor Baker was forming and getting his opioid omnibus bill here in Massachusetts passed, one of the places where he was getting pushback was from physicians who again want to do everything they can to be proactive in fighting the opioid addiction crisis, but they didn't necessarily love the idea of government telling them how many pills they could prescribe. They didn't, you know.
I heard
a lot of doctors saying, you know, we know how to treat our patients best. What's your response to that?
My response is simple. I don't want to be prescribing. I'm not a doctor, and neither of any of the other governors that were just on the panel with me. None of us want to be limiting prescriptions. However, I would say this. If you're in an industry as a healthcare provider that literally passed out 250 million prescriptions of this stuff in 1 year in a country that only has roughly 250 million adults, you know, you're not doing such a great job, team. And I bet you without a medical degree, some governors could do better.
Well, let's talk a little bit more then about what the New England governors can do as a pretty potent team, because you just yesterday, I believe, signed a law that expands the medical conditions that can be used to in order for a medical marijuana prescription. So essentially saying that there are more conditions by which marijuana can be the prescribed treatment versus some of the opioid painkillers. That seems to have gotten a pretty good reception. Why'd you do that?
Well, you know, I spent a lot of time going into prisons when I first realized we had this problem, and I talked to everyone I could talk to, including prisoners. I found when talking, particularly the women prisoners, that they'd say, you know, I got into this mess. I'm in this prison, you know, because I had an accident, bad hip, and it led to all the other things that deteriorated in my life when I went to heroin or whatever the drugs were. My point is that it is not uncommon for pain to be the gateway to addiction, pain medicine, proved by the FDA.
You know, Governor, in these kind of conversations, I always like to see if we can arrive at a place where we have that sense of satisfaction, that we've got a conclusion that we can sink our teeth into. But this problem of opioid addiction is so multifaceted and so deeply ingrained in the lives of so many people that I know we're not going to reach that point. But I got to ask you, you have been and are one of the most passionate and eloquent speakers about this. I mean, you've given, obviously, the State of the State from a couple years ago that caught everyone's attention. You've spoken nationally about this. You've spoken in a way where many times I've heard you can't keep the emotion out of your voice. I just can't imagine that when you first became governor, did you ever think that, like, this would be one of those issues that that would really consume you and your job for the people of Vermont?
Definitely not, and I suspect that's true for most governors right now. What happened to me was Vermont's a small state. Unlike some of the bigger states, you know, Vermonters expect to see their governor every few weeks, so I run around my state in circles every day, almost, and in some form or another. And I just had so many folks, you know, I'd go to the conventions like governors do and give speeches, and I'd have four or five people afterwards grab my jacket and pull me aside and look down in shame. This is 2.5 years ago, and say, you know, I lost my daughter, so I have the grandkids because, you know, she got addicted to opiates, or we've lost our son, we've lost our mom from little kids. I mean, just heart-wrenching stuff. And so I just started going and asking questions and trying to figure it out. And I actually say that of all of our addiction problems, this is the most solvable. Mm-hmm. It really is. So here's the good news. When you have both Republican and Democratic candidates for president talking about this as one of the things they hear in a campaign trail, just like I did in Vermont, this is only in a 2.5 year period, we suddenly have bipartisan agreement with governors and Congress is trying to act. I say, hey, let's have some hope here. Our democracy's working. We're going to the root of the problem. Eventually, and I think sooner rather than later, we can actually turn the dial in a positive way down on opiate addiction by really rethinking the way we deal with pain in America. And that's a very hopeful message, because I think we're getting close.
Well, finally, Governor Shumlin, and forgive me for doing this because you did mention the presidential race, so I got to ask you one last question.
I think I'm used to this question.
I hate turning from the meaningful conversation about opioid addiction to the presidential race, but
take it away.
One must, because as you know, the Associated Press today just said that Hillary Clinton has secured enough delegates to be the presumptive nominee. Do you think it's time for Senator Sanders of Vermont to bow out of the race?
Listen, this is what I know about Bernie. He's a friend of mine, and I'm a Clinton supporter. I just want to be clear about that. I supported Clinton for president, still do, and I think she's going to be an extraordinary president. But Bernie understands that he's got two jobs to do. One is to try win the nomination, and he knows in his heart that's not going to happen, but to continue to raise the issues that he cares and that we all care so passionately about. But he knows the other job. He just can't say it yet. Bernie Sanders does not want Donald Trump to be the leader of the free world. He has huge respect for Hillary Clinton. He likes her, and we're going to be okay.
He's told you that?
Yes. Not recently, but he's told me that many times before this campaign began. He respects her tremendously. He likes her. And he's told me very clearly that he does not want to be a spoiler. He wants to elect a Democratic president to carry out the platform that he so deeply believes in and has been fighting for all his life. So, you know, I keep saying to Democrats and progressives, calm down. This is going to be okay. Do you remember what we all felt like when Clinton and Obama were at this point, and everyone was saying, oh, I'm not going to vote for the other one, and, you know, and everyone was worried Democrats were all worked up, and Obama prevailed and became president and a great one? Hillary Clinton's going to be a great president.
Well, Pete Shumlin is the governor of Vermont. It's been a true pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for coming in and seeing us today.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.